Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's been a minute, but we're here for a very special episode of Hitchcock Happy Hour. I am Lydia Jordan.
And if you've forgotten us, I'm Sarah Shaw. It has been a minute. We had a lot of plans a few months ago to do all of these great movies and talk about them, and then we just simply didn't do it.
Because we are very busy, but there have been some big things happening in Hollywood and some big movies that we wanted to cover as a special episode. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, we're back and we're excited to kind of talk about a lot of the interesting things that are going on in the film industry right now. We're going to spend some time talking about the Barbenheimer craze and then kind of go into a conversation about the strike that's happening in Hollywood that's been going on for a long time. So I'm excited to kind of tie those together and kind of just talk about what's new in Hollywood, which is all of this, all of what I just said.
Wow, a beautiful summary. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We're a little rusty, so bear with us. It's been a minute since we've recorded, but we're back. I know. This will be kind of our reintroduction into maybe a new season of Hitchcock Happy Hour. Who knows?
So bear with us, but it should be a fun one. So we'll go ahead and just start off with Barbie. We've both seen the film. Obviously, Greta Gerwig is incredible. I think we won't give, you know, a deep plot synopsis. I think if you're interested, definitely recommend going and seeing it. I think really what we wanted to cover today was more just kind of our thoughts on the film and why this has become, I would say, even more than a summer blockbuster. I think that's kind of originally how both Oppenheimer and Barbie were positioned, were really to be summer blockbusters. But I feel like this film has become more than that, and I feel like this is something that's going to have staying power.
I totally agree with you, and obviously, just right off the bat, I loved the film. I think it was one of the most creative pieces of writing I've ever seen in a movie. I knew a lot of people were like really surprised that it was as deep as it was, but as soon as I like knew Greta Gerwig was writing it, I was like, this is gonna be like something really special, and it's gonna have a lot of layers, and Margot Robbie can't miss. So like, she's, Ryan Gosling's amazing, and like the cast is incredible, all the characters are super interesting, and it's also really funny and endearing. So I loved the movie. I saw Oppenheimer. Lydia hasn't seen it yet. I actually did the double feature with a friend. We did both of them in one day. I highly recommend. It was really fun. There were
You recommend the Barbenheimer?
Barbenheimer. There were a lot of people doing it, you know, it was a hot summer day, like nothing better to do than sit in a dark, cold movie theater. So it was fun. But I loved Oppenheimer as well. Obviously, totally different movie. A very similar core message, which is women should rule the world, but it is what it is. There's a lot to kind of talk about. Obviously, we're not going to analyze the films. I want to talk more about kind of the like you said, Lydia, the staying power and the impact that they've already had and that I think they are going to have and that they had in their publicity, because what they did was super creative and something I've never seen in Hollywood before. And obviously two very different movies aesthetically and content wise, like very, very different films that happened to be coming out on the same day. And instead of competing with one another to be the top summer blockbuster, I don't know if it was like a purposeful marketing tactic that they chose to kind of market them together, or if it just kind of like the internet did that for them and it kind of worked. But whatever they did, it really worked. And I think what we've seen is this really interesting resurgence in not only this kind of creative writing in these two films, but also like going to the movies again. I think people were kind of excited about it post-COVID, but there wasn't really anything good coming out. I mean,
there
was going to
that
just
film that drew people back in, and I feel like both Barbie and Oppenheimer had that type of draw and allure and almost became a bigger event. Like, it was so fun seeing everyone dressed up for Barbie. People got so into it. It was so many people wearing pink. It just felt like people were excited to go to the movies again. And it was nice to have kind of two very different films on these kind of opposing spectrums, but that challenge the audience, I would say, in different ways. And to your point, have some similarities in kind of the themes that they cover and the topics, but very, very different core, like, you know what I mean? Totally different. Super like, different messages, films. Super different. But I think that they're both very worthy in their own ways, which I feel like is so rare. I mean, usually you get that one film every once in a while, but to have two coming out on the same day. And actually, I was going to ask the same thing, too. I don't know if it was, you know, the like, production that decided to market it together or how that all went down. But I feel like whatever that momentum was absolutely genius. And I feel like whether they started it or not, they ended up picking up on it. And it made it into so much more. And I loved kind of how it became this, you know, really exciting thing that everybody was talking about.
Yeah. And I think what I really liked kind of on top of that, like kind of what you said of like them picking up on it is like once I think the actors and the writers and like the people involved in both films were picking up on this kind of like fun marketing that was happening, like the internet was doing about these two movies coming out, they were promoting each other's films. Like they weren't bashing, they weren't trying to compete. Like they were really like holding these other films up, and like Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie were like posting photos of them going to see Oppenheimer and like talking about how they love Cillian Murphy and like, you know, want to support him and like all this, and Christopher Nolan, of course. And you have, and I think people are talking about like, you know, oh, which one did you like better? There's so, you can't compare the two, which is kind of, yeah, which is kind of helpful in terms of like these two movies can't really compete with one another because they are so different. Their styles are very different. What they're talking about is very different. You know, obviously the plot, they're very, very different. But they're both so incredible. And I think like kind of what you said, like one of the things I liked so much, and I was a little bit, I was a little nervous, but I kind of knew, like I wasn't worried these were going to end up not living up to the hype just because the both Christopher Nolan and Greta Gerwig are like, they're amazing. Like, I've never seen a film of either of them that I didn't like. But I was really excited for, like, oh, like, everyone's so excited to go back to the movies. Like, I really hope that these movies are good, because if they're not, that's going to be a huge bummer. But what we've seen with Barbie and, like, all of these people dressing up and, like, going to the movies in pink and, like, all this stuff, I honestly haven't seen anything like that since the first Harry Potter movie came out
when we were, like, 6 years old. I totally agree. It's been really cool. And what's interesting too is I feel like when I've talked to people, it's a film that people have now seen potentially more than once. And I can't remember a movie where people wanted to go see it again. Like I'll probably go see it again as well. And I can't wait to see Oppenheimer. I still need to do that. But I just think it's really cool to have people excited because I love going to the movies. And it felt like something that was starting to die out a little bit. And I think when we talk about the SAG-AFTRA after a strike as well, I think that really is an interesting, you know, social movement that's happening right now. And there's a lot of really interesting commentary about the future of film and, you know, what that looks like in a streaming centric world. And so I think that that's so interesting to have these two things happening at the same time, but to really see this resurgence of people going to the movies and being like, wow, that was a really great experience. And I really missed that movie going experience. I think a lot of people haven't necessarily had that.
I totally agree. And a point that you made is super important, I think, in that I, in terms of streaming, I think obviously Oppenheimer is a movie that like you have to watch it on the big screen because it is so cinematically beautiful. Like it is one of the best film editing movies I've ever seen in my life. It's so good. The cinematography is outstanding. Obviously, Christopher Nolan, just like he's an absolute wizard when it comes to cinematography. But Barbie as well. I mean, the aesthetic of it is really like really fun and beautiful, and like it should totally be seen on a big screen. But one thing that I am really thankful for seeing with that happened when I saw Barbie is I have never been to a movie where I felt like every woman in the movie theater realized at the same time that like other women had the same experiences that were being portrayed back to them. Like I've never like had that kind of collective, like every woman in the movie theater was laughing at the same jokes and every man in the movie theater was like, I don't get it. Like it was, I've never seen that happen. And it was just like, it was the most, I don't know, it was just like the most sense of like community I've ever experienced going to a movie before. Yeah. Like it was just like, I've never like, it was like a
very like validating experience.
Yeah, to be it was seen very validating. And I felt like that. There were a lot of things that were like Greta Gerwig had written in that movie and that were being portrayed to the audience that I didn't realize other women had those experiences too. And so when other women were laughing at these jokes or were like, oh my God, like that's, you know, the Godfather thing particularly made me laugh.
So funny.
I like things like that, that I just, yeah, I just like, it was so satisfying and just like such an empowering moment. Like nobody even like spoke about it, but you could just tell like every woman at the same time realized like every other woman has had these experiences too. And it was just, I've never ever in my life been to a movie and like had that happen before. And it was just like so beautiful. And that for Barbie, like that's the reason I think like it's super important to go see that movie in the movie theater, because there's a lot of like mothers and daughters that are seeing that movie together. And there's a very strong like like mother-daughter, you know, theme in that film. And I think it's a really important movie for like young kids to see. I know a lot of people are like, well, it's not, you know, like, why are you taking your kids to it? Because it's not actually like about Barbie. It's like all like deeper than that. But young girls like definitely need to see that movie. And Oppenheimer too. I mean, it's obviously very different, but I think people are kind of hesitant to see it because they think it's like, you know, about the glory of like dropping this, you know, horrific weapon that we created during World War II, but it's actually a very, very strong anti-war movie and a very strong anti-war message. And I think it's a really important right now, a really, really important movie to see in a different way. But yeah, I just like the going back to the movie theater with these two films was just, it was so great. Like I love that. I felt like how it felt when we were kids, when we would go to the movies.
No, I did too. There was like that sense of excitement that it was just so cool to see everyone, you know, waiting in line. And it was really cool too. We have two theaters in my neighborhood. It's like a family owned theater. And, you know, we had gone and seen a couple movies, you know, during COVID and then after kind of COVID, you know, quote ended, I guess. And, you know, it was always, we were maybe like one of two or three groups in the theater, but it was so cool to see them totally sold out. Just to have so many people showing up, like the showing that we went to was, it was like a 4:30 showing, I think, or something. It was pretty early. And it was crazy cause it was packed. And I think that was really cool to see as well. Especially for kind of those family owned theaters to have that level of business. I think that that's probably pretty exciting as well.
Yeah. I mean, people are talking about these two movies essentially like saving the cinemas, like saving going to the cinema. Like the idea of going to the movies is kind of like being reborn. And I think it's super important, especially with Barbie, because it does reach a younger generation who didn't have the same experience of like going to the movies that we did when we were kids, that they get that and they like can then be excited about doing that again and doing that with other movies. And it's not just like the fucking Transformers or something like that. Like it's actually like a good movie. And
No, I was going to say too, I mean, I feel like what's exciting too, just with the massive success for both of these films is hopefully we'll get to see more films like this. You know what I mean? Where, and I think that that's what's so exciting about how film has changed from the time that we were kids is just the perspectives are so different. And the stories that we're telling, I think, are a lot more nuanced than maybe what we have seen before. Like, I don't know that Barbie, as it stands today, could have been made even 5 or 10 years ago. And so it's really cool to see how these stories are being told in ways that really connect with people on these other levels. And I think that that's what made, to your point, that collective movie-going experience so powerful, was to be in those moments together and sharing those experiences. Like, it was really moving and cool, and I just like loved how fun and engaged everyone was. You know, even during the more kind of intense moments or the parts where, you know, it was kind of more of the heavy hitting stuff, it was really special to feel that like shared bond. And like I don't remember the last time I felt that at the movies. It was really cool.
I totally agree. And you know, it's like, to your point of, you know, the fact that this movie got made is like so amazing is that, I think I heard a quote of like Margot Robbie, saying like when Greta Gerwig first presented her with the script, she actually like first initially signed on as a producer. So she was a producer in the film, which is amazing. Cause then it showed, you know, these kinds of movies without a female producer or director writer, like never would have gotten made. But When she read the script for the first time, she was like, this is one of the best scripts I've ever read. Too bad no one's ever going to make this movie. Like, no production company will ever make this film. And so she signed on as a producer and she's like, I'm just going to do it. Like, this needs to be made. And so it just goes to show, like, even a couple years ago, there are people, like, women in Hollywood, like, didn't think this kind of movie could ever get made. Like, they just still, like, big production companies would never have signed off on it. But the fact that it did get made and how much money it's bringing in and how important it is and how big it's become, I think goes to show, to your point, that, like, a summer blockbuster doesn't need to be Avengers, Fast and Furious 10, Transformers, like, something like that. It can be, like, an actually good cinematic experience, like, well, kind of pure cinema. Like, it can
have substance, and it can have
substance but still be fun. Like, it can still be a good movie. It doesn't have to be one or the other. So I think, I don't know, and even with Oppenheimer, obviously it's not like a funny movie. It's a long movie, but it is so well done. Like, you do not feel like it's 3 hours long. Like, I was never bored in the movie. And I just think it's so important that we're seeing that right now. And I think, you know, production companies, there's gonna have to be a rewrite of Hollywood. I mean, we've been seeing it a lot with, like, kind of the ethics of Hollywood has been changing for a long time, but in terms of, like, how, you know, women in Hollywood are treated and all that. But now, you know, we're talking about, like, labor and, you know, the people that are making these films and these movies getting made. Like, production companies kind of have to take note and, like, kind of rebrand a little bit. I think we're about due for it. It happened, you know, 50-ish years ago, 60-ish years ago, one of the biggest rebrands of Hollywood ever, like, the death of the studio system. But, you know, now it's kind of, we're in a new era, and there's tension in Hollywood, and it's interesting that all of the strike stuff is happening at the same time that, like, two of the biggest movies of essentially, like, the 21st century are being released. So, I mean, it's interesting, like, how do you kind of, do you have any thoughts on, like, that all happening together?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is very fascinating. And for those that don't know, the strike went into effect. They had been, you know, in negotiations and then finally decided to officially strike. I think the night that Oppenheimer came out, so actually the main stars left the red carpet for kind of the premiere event because the strike had started in the U.S.
And you're talking about the really SAG powerful. Strike, right?
SAG-AFTRA.
Because the Writers Guild strike happened in, like, March. Like, they've been striking since, like, March.
They've been striking since March, but they were now joined by SAG-AFTRA, which I think is actually more powerful that they can collectively come together. I mean, I think it's shocking that the studios haven't been able to negotiate with the Writers Guild since they've been striking for so long. And I feel for the writers and those affected by the strike, because that is an incredibly long time to not be able to be working. And I mean, the reasons why they're striking are so intense. Like, and I think maybe we can talk a little bit about, I'm not as familiar with kind of the terms for the Writers Guild. I think maybe SAG-AFTRA and kind of what they're asking for has been a little bit more publicized, or maybe a little bit, like, easier to break down. But I mean, in essence, people aren't getting residuals for films anymore in the era of streaming. And residuals are really what allowed many people in this industry to kind of continue to support themselves, because it isn't incredibly lucrative, or it's, you know, a very short period where you're getting, you know, paid for the work that you do. And many people depend on residuals to be able to have a livelihood. And like, famous actresses, you know, were not qualifying for health insurance. You have to make at least $26,000 in order to qualify for insurance. And many people fall below that, which is shocking. Like, how do you live on less than $26,000 a year? You know, but you're famous. It's this really shocking disparity that I think a lot of people didn't even realize were happening.
I totally agree. It's really interesting. And I think it was maybe, like, Mandy Moore or Drew Barrymore or something. I saw, like, an interview about when the strike happened, when the SAG-AFTRA strike started, and they were talking about it. And I think it was Mandy Moore, because I think she was talking about how she's, like, getting these, like, checks in the mail from Netflix for A Walk to Remember for, like, 3 cents, because the era of streaming, they're not getting paid, even though people have wider access to these films. But what's happening is that because people are watching these movies so much and they're not giving residuals to actors because of, like, kind of the breadth of the streaming services, like, you can pretty much have access to everything, it's that the heads of these companies, like Netflix and stuff like that, they're raking in, like, $6 million bonuses at the end of the year. And it's insane. It's insane. Like, thinking about that is insane. I don't know if it's exactly 6 million, but it's in the millions there. Someone will have to fact check me on that one. But they're raking in, like, millions in bonuses alone because they're not giving residuals to actors. And writers, in the same way, they just want fair labor rights. And, you know, the production companies are basically saying, until writers can't afford rent, like, we are not negotiating with them, which is insane, because all of these production companies would not make money
if it weren't for these
yeah. writers. But because of the streaming industry and the streaming services that we have, they have libraries of movies that are already made. So they're still making money, because it's not that Hollywood's at, like, a total standstill, because they, like, Netflix, you can still watch movies that have already been produced and are out.
Content that has already been created, that they're profiting off of. And I think it's interesting too, we've seen it recently in how Netflix and other streaming services have restructured too for customers, where you're no longer able to share accounts anymore. Many platforms have increased their prices, and yet they're not able to offer fair wages to the people creating the films, which I think is disgusting.
It's interesting. And I wonder, like, also, I haven't done any research on this. I don't know if you have, like, a thought on it or anything. But, you know, production companies, obviously we think of streaming services now because that's where we watch most of our content. But, like, NBC, ABC, like, they still exist. And they still rely on, like, live, like, you know, weekly release dramas to make money. And so it's different than a streaming service, because they can't just keep, I mean, they're going to run out of reruns. I mean, I know Grey's Anatomy has been on for, like, 20 years, but
they got, like, there's 10 only years so of much.
Yeah. So I wonder if it's, like, affecting those industries a little bit differently, like the actual, like, you know, studios, not just, like, these streaming services. But, what I'm seeing is they're still not really, haven't really gotten to a place where they're willing to negotiate. But I do find it really interesting, and you can just tell, like, how big of a deal this is I think I read somewhere that it's the first time in, like, 63 years that the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA have joined in a strike together. I think we had a writer's strike that went on for about 14 weeks back in 2008. I remember that was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, there was one in 2008, and then I think the last one was in the 80s. So, I mean, these aren't, like, frequent occurrences. I mean, I think it's at the breaking point, and
this is a long one. This has been going on, if you're counting Writers Guild strike alone, it's been going on since March. And, like, now with kind of how the film industry works, you don't have people that are only directors, only writers, only actors. Like, you have people that are in all of those roles, and you even have actors that are in producer roles. Obviously, they're not, like, studio heads, but you have actors, you have writers in all levels of Hollywood. And so when it makes more sense now that, like, when one of these associations and unions is striking, the other ones will have to follow suit as well. So it's really interesting, because now I don't know, like, where the Directors Guild falls at this point, because, like, they don't have work either. If everyone else is striking, there's nothing, no films to be made, no TV shows to be made. So it's really interesting. And I find it really interesting that, like, even, like, how powerful this is, it just goes to show, like, even at the premiere of Oppenheimer, like you said, all the actors, like, got up and, or a bunch of the actors got up and, like, walked out in the middle of the premiere. Just not, you know, obviously nothing against the film, but just for the sake of, like, they had
not
to.
Not crossing the, yeah. the picket line.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to stand with the unions. I think having unions is incredibly important, and the issues that they're drawing attention to are, I think, amplifying what a lot of Americans are facing. Inflation and cost of living has increased exponentially. And to not have wages that reflect a living wage, especially in some of the most expensive cities in America, especially when, yeah, to your point, the CEOs and leads of the company are getting millions of dollars in bonuses. They're raking in insane profits. And I think that this corporate greed and need to just consistently, you know, deliver these insane profits, it's not sustainable, and it's not going to work. You know, if you have an entire workforce who can't even afford to live. Like, I think that this is really something unprecedented that we haven't really seen before. So it'll be at least in our lifetime.
No, and you're so right. And I think, like, it's really interesting because it reminds me a lot of, like, it wasn't as, I think, publicized, but kind of when you were talking about how, like, these famous actresses are, like, not qualifying for health insurance. Like, if you go all the way back to the studio system, that's like, you know, these, it's kind of like these contract actors at this point, because they rely, like, they didn't make money if they weren't working. Like, they, it was, like, obviously they were, like, very, you know, famous, but if you see interviews with, like, Barbara Stanwyck or, like, you know, Betty Davis or whatever, they're, like, even Katharine Hepburn, they are just, like, it's a job. Like, we're doing this because it's a job. Like, if we didn't do this, we wouldn't make any money. Like, yeah. And if they didn't work, or if they were getting, like, benched because they, you know, messed something up or, like, pissed off a producer or a studio head, they weren't making any money. Like, it kind of just goes to show that, like, this hold that these studio heads have had over actors and writers for so long, it hasn't really gone away. Like, there's still, like, all that residual from the studio system even today.
Yeah, and it's just changed.
It's changed and adapted and turned into this, like, weird, like, the structure of the streaming services has kind of made it very interesting and unique. And I just think, like, these policies and guidelines and contracts that we have for the workforce it doesn't fit with how the film industry is running today with streaming services and the, like, access, like, the just kind of saturated access to film and TV. But I think it's such a no-brainer. Like, these companies, like, wouldn't make any money without any of these people that they're not
100%.
paying.
100%. And honestly, yeah. The cost of paying them it's not that much. Like, you
it's
know
like,
what I mean?
Just don't take your $1 million bonus at the end of the year. You're already making, like, 7 figures anyway.
Yeah, it's not, like, I mean, and I haven't looked at, like, the financial reports of all of these companies, but I think largely they are all profitable and are making a lot in revenue. It's not like there is this, you know, huge deficit in their budget where they wouldn't be able to pay it. Again, this is 100% just corporate greed. And, you know, I think this narrative is really interesting, too, because I think there is also this idea that fame or celebrity somehow then equates with money. So I think when we look at a lot of these celebrities, or kind of the narrative that's been pushed is, like, well, they're famous, like, how could this be affecting them? You know, or they're very successful. And I think that that's what's so important about this. And I think it's been really interesting seeing, you know, famous celebrities posting images of their residuals. I saw one for $0 and 0 cents. They got a check for nothing.
And, like, like an actual check. Like an actual check. They didn't get a check. They just got a check that said zero on it.
That says zero. And it's, like, it's really insane, too. I know that Orange is the New Black has been kind of a, you know, a focus of this narrative as well. They had, you know, contested that while that was coming out, because it was one of the most popular shows at the time. And most of them had to keep their other jobs because they weren't making enough money to afford to just do the show. So they were still waitressing and, you know, working service jobs to make ends meet, even though they were on the super, you know, famous show. And customers would be like, what are you doing here? Like, you're famous. And they're like, but I can't afford rent if I don't work here. So I think that that's really interesting, too.
It's interesting because I think we think, especially if you're thinking about, like, the music industry, this idea of royalties, like, these people make this one famous movie in, like, you know, 10 years ago, and they're just, like, raking in money from that. Not anymore. Like, it doesn't really exist anymore. Like, that idea of that, like, is kind of dead because of the streaming industry. And I think, you know, the music industry had to adapt to that years ago when Spotify and iTunes came out. And the film industry is catching up. I mean, it's just, like, it's happening. But one focus I wanted to point out, and I find this very interesting, and of course it's the studio, is the one studio that SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild are allowing to keep making their productions go is A24, because A24 accepted off the bat every single condition of SAG-AFTRA, and they're still making money. Like, they're making a profit. Like, it hasn't affected their production company, but they accepted every condition, and SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild are allowing them to produce films. Like, they're allowing them to work. Like, writers and actors are allowed to work for A24. Because they accepted everything.
Yeah, I think that's such an important
thing. Which is like, shout out to A24.
We love them. We love their films. But I think it just goes to show you can still be successful and still give people a living wage and meet the demands of a union.
And that's that is one of the most successful in terms of like, you know, like the art, the creative artistic aspect of the film industry. That is one of the most successful studios. They had like the most Oscar wins last year. And it, so it's not just some random independent studio. That's like, A24 is a big studio now. I mean, it wasn't, but it is now. It's fairly, I mean, it's, yeah.
It's so interesting seeing that behavior versus, I believe it was Paramount, where I don't know if you saw that, where they actually cut the trees where people were picketing to make the conditions intentionally uncomfortable. I think they got slapped with like a very small fine by the city, which is, I mean, kind of all they could do. But I just think it's interesting to see that type of behavior versus, you know, how you could handle it, where it's like, this doesn't need to be going on for so long. What they're asking for is not at all ridiculous or, you know, unheard of. And again, like, you can accept the terms and continue to work and still make a profit and still make great films. So
totally, I totally agree. It's just super fascinating to me because I think like we forget that because movies and, you know, a lot of TV shows are so focused on the arts and like the writers and the actors are artists, like we think of the film industry as the arts, but behind it is this like very, very, you know, capitalistic machine of like corporate, you know, funding in all of these companies, which kind of started with the end of the studio system, where you had all these kind of like big, you know, industrial companies like LG and whatever, like basically buying these studios. But it turned into this profit making machine. Like, that's what the film industry is. It's not really about the arts. I mean, a lot, and there are some obviously studios like A24 that have kind of ethics and focus on that, but we don't think about that because we're watching the movie for the actors, for the writer. Like, you know, I'm going to see a movie because it's Greta Gerwig. I'm not going to see a movie because it's a Paramount movie. Like, and it's interesting that these production companies are so against that, even though they know they would not be making money without these people.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I think this has kind of peeled back the curtain for hopefully a lot of consumers of media. I mean, all of us are consumers of this in one way or another, but I think it is really interesting because I think there's also been a lot of assumptions about what, when you pay for a film or when you pay for a service, what that goes towards. And I think that this really pulls the curtain open and allows us to see that where we thought our money was going maybe isn't where it is. Because I think a lot of us assumed different actors and actresses would be rich because their films did really well, or, you know, they had a Netflix exclusive film or a Netflix exclusive show that we loved. And then to find out that they actually barely made any money from it, it is really shocking when, you know, as a consumer, prices have gone up, your services are maybe more limited at certain levels. And, you know, you would assume that that means that more is going towards the people creating and participating in these shows. And to have that not be the case, I think is also a really interesting realization maybe for people who weren't aware.
And I mean, and it's just like, also like, we're talking about like the people that are struggling really hard that we're talking about are like the famous actors, the famous writers, all these things. To make a film, you have so many other people that aren't even included in this, that aren't, you that are making less money. You have all the ADs, you have all of the crew, like, none of these people are
assistants.
So if the people that we think are like getting super rich off of these things are also struggling, like, imagine how it's affecting like the actual everyday workers of these films and of these sets and productions. It's just fascinating to me. And it's just like, how long are the studios going to do this? I mean, it's going to be really interesting if this goes into Oscar season or award show season, because the people aren't going to be showing up. There's not going to be any ceremony of like Oscars, Emmys, Golden Globes, which is whatever, that's fine. But it's just interesting. Like, it's just interesting that these production companies are just so, and these streaming services are just so adamant about this, when eventually someone's gonna have to give, because we just, like, the consumers are gonna start getting a little bit antsy of like, okay, we, you know, I want to see the next season of my favorite show, like, and, you know, this, I know that this movie is gonna be coming out sometime soon, like, but not anymore. So, I mean, it's just really, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. It's fascinating that this is happening at the same time that two of the, like, biggest movies kind of got people going back to the movies came out, and that's kind of going to be it for a minute because those kind of snuck in right before this happened, but...
Yeah. And I think in some ways, too, that timing is hopefully beneficial for SAG-AFTRA to get a little bit more traction and attention, because I don't know that they maybe would have had as much visibility on kind of the issues that they're really looking to solve. And I think what's interesting too is the way that it could be painted in the media if it wasn't, you know, if there wasn't kind of that more global awareness of what's going on. Because I think if the studios were kind of telling their side of the story of what the strike is about, that's very different than hearing it from the actors or from the people creating these films who, you know, are having a really hard time. So
I totally agree.
But I feel like this has been such a fun episode. It feels good to be back.
Yeah. If anybody has thoughts, feelings, whatever on this topic, reach out. We're curious. If you have more information for us, we'd love to know. These are just our thoughts. We didn't do any research in advance, but it's just a lot going on in the film industry right now, and we are like ready and willing to talk about it. So
yeah, we love it.
A lot of good stuff coming out soon. So yeah, this is fun. We'll probably schedule some episodes coming up soon. We'll get back in by spooky season for sure. We will have one up.
We will be here for spooky season. Absolutely. We might do a few. We're taking requests on other episodes you want to see in the meantime. But yeah, felt like this was a really great place to come back. We're, you know, talking about this all the time, just the two of us, and thought others might want to know what we thought or join the conversation as well.
Yes. And I would say check us out on Instagram and TikTok, but it's been a bit dark there for me.
I mean, you can, but it's nothing super new there. But go
nothing
ahead.
Nothing super new there.
Try a new cocktail. See.
Try a new cocktail or an old cocktail.
Or, yeah.
Well, this has been fun, and, you know, a lot going on, and I'm just excited to see what, you know, what happens, and we're obviously on the side of SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild of America, or Writers Guild Association, whatever the A stands for, I don't know. Writers Guild of America? I think it's of America, right?
That sounds right.
Sure. We'll go with that. Again, did not do much research on this. This is just our thoughts. But we're very fascinated by this, and we just, like, hope that Hollywood can finally have its total overhaul of policy and contract writing for these people that are, like, you know, making Hollywood run, and they definitely deserve to get paid accordingly with, you know, health insurance. So
no, 100%. Everyone deserves to have access to health insurance. And I hope too that we can figure out a way where we can live in a capitalist society and still people can live within it. So
yes, and pay rent without having to work like five jobs. So
yeah, you know that.
Well, that was a fun episode. I'm glad we got to talk about that. And if anyone else has seen Barbie and Oppenheimer, feel free to reach out and tell us how you felt about it, because we loved Barbie and I loved Oppenheimer, and I know Lydia will love it too.
So. I can't wait to see it.
Well, on that note, we will catch you next time at some point in the future. I'm not going to make any promises on when that will be.
And until then, cheers!